Okay, so we will start now. Well, first of all, welcome. You can tell you're in the right place because there are technical problems. And you can, I hope, tell we're in the right place because we're going to be talking about, what is it, Unit 3, Session 3 of the TSK program. And the theme for this week is space. So, and as it announces at the beginning of When It Rains, the next three units go back over space, time, and knowledge again. So it's like a second introduction, but it's adding on a new layer that is helpful in really engaging the vision. So that's what's going on. Let me mention a couple of things. One is it's been a kind of a difficult time the last month. And so there were things I was planning and hoping to do for this course that I haven't done. The people in the teacher training session, I owe you a little more attention. And I had hoped to do an orientation before this program, this first session class, but I didn't. But I will get back into doing the orientations and hopefully be able to catch up with the other things. So my apology, and let's move ahead. The second thing that I wanted to remind you of is the schedule for this program is that, we're going to be skipping a week. That doesn't happen until February, but I wanted to remind you right now. Also have a little technical issue, but not too bad. But it means I haven't gotten back to the right place. Okay, so we are going to skip February 16th. So that means we'll do the first five classes, and then we'll skip a week, and then the last one will be on February 23rd. Okay, I think those are the practical issues. I hope people are tuned in the right way and that it's working well. I don't know why it's not working. It hasn't been working as we intended, but maybe Kathleen will be able to figure it out. So the main point in this session, we're going back to space, and the main point that we're going to be talking about is the relationship between mind and space. And so we want to look at that from a variety of different perspectives. Now, there are some other very interesting things that come up in the course of that. But basically, the reading points out that we want to be able to understand the relationship between mind and space. And more fundamentally, we want to get used to the idea that space is not just physical space. And we've talked about that in different ways, I'm sure, in what we've done so far. And it's interesting, you know, I think most people, you might kind of lose people at that point. People would say, well, of course space is physical space. And sure, we refer to things that go on in the mind as involving a kind of space, you know. But that's just an analogy. It's because we don't have any really good language for talking about the mind because it's interior and we can't see it. So we just borrow the language, the vocabulary that applies to space, and it's an analogy. Well, that's one way of thinking about it. But it's not necessarily the most, well, from a TSK perspective, it's definitely not the most fruitful way of thinking about it. And it's not fruitful partly because if we really take seriously the idea that mind is like space, that it's a kind of an accommodating dimension, that helps us to understand a lot of things about the mind, and that's really important in itself. But it's also not fruitful, not the best way to think about it, because if we understand if we understand the mind as being like space, it helps us get more clear about what space is like. Because when you think about the mind, if you think about events that go on in the mind, and it's easiest usually, I think, to just use thoughts as an example, because if you use sensations, that brings the body back in. We're kind of trying to separate out the mind right now. So if you think about thoughts, or memories would work too, and other things would work, but thoughts is probably the easiest. So if you think about thoughts, and you say thoughts arise in the mind, so something shows up in the mind, and that's exactly the same model as saying an object shows up in space. Now, the objects that show up in space have a very different set of characteristics from the objects, the thoughts that show up in the mind, because thoughts just come and go very quickly, and I'm just pointing to the most obvious fact. Thoughts come and go very quickly, and objects, usually we think of objects as enduring for a while. Now, that might not be the right way to think about them, but they usually, you know, we would say, you know, my computer sitting in front of me is the same computer that I bought 6 months ago, and so on. But if I think about how much I paid for my computer, that thought, is that the same thought as the thought that I had 6 months ago when I thought about how much I was paying for my computer? Well, we tend to say no. You might say yes, we don't need to go into that complication. But in any event, thoughts are different. The quality, the characteristics of thoughts are different from the characteristics of objects. But they both share this notion that they show up somewhere. And that somewhere that they show up in is physical space, we say, for objects, and mental space for thoughts. And the what's helpful in that is that when you see the way that mental space or the mind, because I'm going to just kind of equate those two, when you see the way that the mind relates to thoughts or is connected to thoughts, you see that space as mind space, is really inseparable from the thoughts. No mind, no awareness, then no thinking, no thoughts. And that helps us to understand something about the relationship generally of space to what shows up in space. And it helps us to see why Rinpoche is using this understanding of space as not as something physical, but as the open accommodating quality that allows things to appear. So it takes some thinking about that, but that is to say, that's not intuitively obvious, but there's also no reason not to think about it that way. The only reason you might say not to think about it that way is, well, it's useful to be able to distinguish the mental realm from the physical realm, and of course it is. But that doesn't keep you from regarding both of them as being space. You say, okay, there's two different types of space, and in fact, there are many different kinds of space. And the reading from Knowledge of Time and Space for this week, we're not going to go into it in any kind of systematic way, but it's a wonderful chapter, it seems to me, because it helps point out that the kind of simple distinction we make between the mental space and the physical space is really, it doesn't stand up if you start to think about what's going on in space. It gives all these wonderful examples, the chapter does, about how that actually works. So for instance, when thoughts show up, it seems as though there has to be a space in which the thought shows up. And normally we say, I got distracted by Kathleen's message. Does everybody see who's on the computer? She's saying, you should be able to see me in regular mode now, but everything has been slowed down quite a bit. Actually, I don't notice any problem, but for some people, apparently, there is a problem. Okay, so I was saying that when you have a thought, it shows up in a space, which is kind of the space of awareness. And just to pick another set of words for a moment. That space is usually we associate it with a physical space, which is kind of surprising. You know, we say, well, normally we think of thoughts as being in our heads, right? That's where we think. And in fact, we even our sense of ourselves is usually situated in our heads, behind our eyes, right? We sort of see the world from behind our eyes, and that's where we are. And if we think about our foot, it's as though we are thinking down. You know, we locate ourselves in a particular place in physical space, even though our mental space is you know, it's very hard to say that it's located right there behind the eyes. You could say it, but you know, why, that doesn't make any sense. Especially if you say, "Oh, that's not space at all." Well, then why do we associate it with a particular place in space? That's part of what knowledge of time and space talks about. There's many other examples that it gives that are really, really helpful. One of them has to do with dreams. You know, the space of dreams, where we are moving around. And actually, I had a pretty vivid dream last night. I won't go into it, but it really kind of confirmed what that chapter in Knowledge of Time and Space says. You know, you're in a particular place, and then suddenly you're somewhere else, and then suddenly the person you're talking to is somewhere else, and then suddenly you're no longer in a car, you're in a boat, and all these things shift around. So, but it's all happening in a certain kind of dream space. So the different possibilities for space, each with their own qualities, they're related to each other, they're different. It becomes a really fascinating area to explore. And I want to give you an example that you might think of, that we could think about together for a moment, just to see some of these levels. If you own a car, think of your car. And if you don't own a car, think of the last time you rode in a car or maybe drove a car. And when you do, you're going to get an image, probably. If not, then listen patiently. But you're going to get an image of the car. Right? And there are, the moment you think of your car, all sorts of, or several different levels, let's say, of space come into play. The first is the place where the thought of the car, the image of the car, the place where that is showing up, that seems to be showing up in this mental realm of thinking space, right? And in fact, it seems to be associated in the physical realm with your head for most people. So that's one level, you might say two levels. Then you have the space that surrounds the car, you know. If you have an image of the car, the only way you can, again, for most people, the only way you're going to be able to have an image of the car is to bring in a little space, right? It has to be surrounded by space. And in fact, if you think about it, there has to be some sort of an image space, you know, in which the car shows up. So that's the second level of space. And then the third level of space is the space of the memory that you're having of the car, which is different from the space that is surrounding the car in the image, and is different from your thought right now, your memory. It's the space that the car was occupying at the time, at the moment that you're imagining it or remembering. So there's a lot going on. There's the the relationship between thoughts and space is really a wonderfully fruitful place to explore. And if you've been doing exercise 11, it's really about that exploration in ways that we'll talk about more. This is all just kind of setting that up. So Michael says, it makes sense that thought needs a thinking space and physical appearance needs a physical space. Just as a bird needs the air to fly, a fish the water to swim, and I need room for my fingers to type. That's right. We depend on space. We have to have space. I'm just doing something now, and you might want to do that too, I'm just sort of imagining typing. I'm not actually typing, but I'm moving my fingers as though I were on a keyboard. And you can see you just have to be able to move through space. And in the same way, it's true, when you think, there has to be this thought space that makes it possible. I'm not going to belabor the point anymore. But once we see that, once we see the connection between mental space and physical space, and once we see them, and this is the way I want to kind of refer to it, is that they're both examples of space. And when we get into the TSK reading in a minute or two, it'll be 5 minutes. When we get into the TSK, I think we'll be able to go into this more. But for now, the important thing to see is that once you understand that thoughts show up in space, different space, but they show up in space, now you're much more able to understand what Rinpoche means when he says that thoughts are structured by space. This line at the beginning of TSK when he says space is projecting space into space. You can understand that it's a much more natural, intuitive thing once you make this connection, because thoughts are it's just true for thoughts. Thoughts are this made up of the same stuff as awareness. There's no possibility of separating the two. Whereas when we look at physical space, we tend to say, somehow, physical stuff, atoms and so on, are different from the space in which they show up. This is a way of calling that into question. I think that's very helpful to be able to call it into question like that. It leads to the definition that that you find in the TSK book on page 50, when Rinpoche gives a definition of space, and he says, space will henceforth refer to a dimension of reality whose openness is both a prerequisite and concomitant feature of all experienced happening. Now, that's an unusually formal and stiff way of writing in TSK, it seems to me. I think it's very understandable if people read that and it just doesn't go in, it doesn't sink in, because it's said in a language that is kind of off-putting, I think. But I think we can say it much more simply. In order for something to appear at all in our experience, let's say, because we're not going to worry about, let's say, the other side of the world, which does not show up in our experience. But in order for something to appear at all, space has to allow it. I think allowing and accommodating, those are the two words, and they're used a lot in TSK. Allowing and accommodating are the two words that they give a very clear sense of what Rinpoche is pointing to here. So the mind allows thoughts, and the mind allows memories, and for that matter, it allows sensations and perceptions and all of that. So suddenly it turns out that mind space is very important. But in the same way, you could say physical space is a particular kind of space that allows physical objects to appear, or a particular aspect of space, if you want to say that, or a dimension of space. So I want to take a minute or two. I'm not going to, well, if people want to comment after this, let's do it. I was going to try to do two exercises, but we've been a little slowed down at the beginning here. I want to give us a little exercise to kind of explore that. First, I'll see that Michael makes another comment, which is concomitant and precursor has the affect of invoking a non-linear view of time. The past and the present are one whole in appearance. So, Michael, if I understand you correctly, you're kind of justifying this use of this rather stiff definition. It's sort of pointing out that space has to be there before something happens, and it has to be there as it's happening. It is, in a sense, the happening. So past and future arise together. Yeah, I think that's fair. So okay, the practice is very simple. Just look around, and as you do, focus on the fact that everything is appearing in space. And in order to make that a little more playful, we kind of like to try to bring in this playful dimension, try to see that happening from moment to moment. So wherever you look, it's a brand new moment. And in that moment, something is appearing in physical space. We're talking about physical space now. It's like the notion that in cosmology that matter kind of even in a vacuum, matter is always sort of popping into existence and then popping back out. So in a sense, we're trying to imagine that that's the case here. And with this sense that whatever shows up is appearing in space in every moment, just popping in, popping up. Wherever you look, something pops up. And if you look in the same place for more than one moment, it pops and then it pops again. It's still there. What do you know? So let's do that for a minute. Okay. So if you want to, if there's anything that struck you about that and you want to comment on it, right now or in the chat, that's fine. But I'm actually going to go on because, I mean, I'll come back to your comments if you make them. But I'm going to go on. This is just meant to give a little bit of an experiential flavor to the sense that space is implicit, is involved in every experience. And it's as though if you, when doing, you do this exercise, and you can try it during the week. When you do this exercise, you're inviting the openness, the open dimension. Remember, that's what Rinpoche calls it, the open dimension, to show up. So within experience, things become more open. They become more alive. So I hope that you got a little sense of that with that particular practice. Okay, now I want to move on to TSK, and in particular, I mean, to the reading from the Time Space Knowledge Book. And in particular, I want to go to the very first line and spend a couple of minutes talking about that. Because I think it's really important. You know, again and again, we need to remind ourselves, it seems to me, that we are not trying to put in place a particular view. You could say we're trying to activate, as this line says, this sentence says, we're trying to activate a new vision, but we're not trying to put into place a new view. And the difference is that a view says, this is the way things are. Whereas a vision says, here's a way of looking. So if you look at the very first line, it says, it should now be clear, that the new view of reality, which is gradually being activated, rejects the truth of linear connections and causes and so on. So I just want to mainly focus on this phrase, a new view of reality. And it's basically what I just said, but I want to come back and look at it in terms of this phrasing, because it's very useful. We're not trying to say reality is not what we think it is. Well, maybe we are. Let's see. We're not trying to say, we're not trying to put in place a new reality or a new understanding. Well, it's hard to get the language right. So maybe I'll just stay with what Rinpoche says here. The point is that what TSK does is give us a view of what counts as reality. It's a new view of what reality is. So it's not undermining the usual reality. The usual reality can kind of stay. It turns out that it's more open, more flexible, more fluid than we might imagine. But we're not trying to undermine it exactly. We're just saying that when we say that something is real, it doesn't mean what we usually think it means. It doesn't mean that it's fixed and solid and stable. It means that it's a particular, it's the output, to use some of the TSK, the language from this first book, it's the output of a particular focal setting. It's based on seeing things a certain way. And reality never gets more real than that. Reality never turns into something that's absolutely, that's solid and beyond the possibility of changing. Now, it's very, we're very committed to reality. We're very committed to a particular view. And that makes it very difficult to change. But that is you could say, a failure of our imagination. So Sudhi says here, TSK is inviting us to see more inclusiveness of possibilities. Yes, that's absolutely right. But I do want to stay with the language that's being used here, because TSK undermines a certain understanding of reality. It's not so different from undermining the usual understanding of space, because we say, well, space is associated with the physical realm. And TSK undermines that and says, no, wherever there's openness, whenever there's accommodating, whenever there's allowing, that's space at work. And here, it's not the same point, but it's related. The idea that reality is not what we think it is. Reality is not solid in the way that we think it is. Points us toward that openness from a different direction. Whatever appears is a particular focal setting. And the vision of reality that TSK is putting in place, is activating, is not one more focal setting. It's a vision of reality as established by focal settings, as shaped by the openness of space and the dynamic of time and the inclusive awareness of knowledge. Those might not be the best words, but they'll do for right now. So what that means is that reality shows up as a whole. You know, when we did this little practice right now for a minute, I said, well, things pop up, right? In space, like in each moment, something new pops up. And that's kind of the quality. The you see what appears as a whole. And that's why Rinpoche says right here that there's no source. There's no source for reality. And that's a very interesting, it's a very radical statement in one way, but it's kind of self-evident if you see it from within the TSK perspective. So in the last sentence of this paragraph, he says, the source of experience is not the self, not the mind, not some psychophysiological apparatus, not any other item within the ordinary worldview. So the point is, you have a particular focal setting, which you could also call a worldview. And in that worldview, there's all sorts of things you can look at. You can look at the mind, you can look at the self, you can look at physical objects. Depending on your worldview, maybe you can look at a creator god. You can look at all these different possibilities. And that's fine. And they're all there, and we're not trying to question them, really. But none of them works to establish reality. They're all just part of reality. And there is no source. The very notion of source is also a part of reality. So it's a no source from view, as Rinpoche says, I think, on the next page. But he says it here too. There is no thing you can point to and say, this is what causes reality. And you know, if reality doesn't have a cause, then it's very different from what we usually think it is. So Hayward, Hayward asks an interesting question regarding the psychophysical cause of experience. To have a brain damaged experience, do we need to have a brain that is damaged? So if you know the people who have brain damage experience a very different kind of reality often, and we call it damage because it's usually in some sense a limited or restricted or painful kind of experience. And so Hayward asks, well, if you have a brain damaged experience, does that mean you have a brain that is damaged? And I think the answer to that is absolutely yes. That makes perfect sense within the worldview that you've created. You know, and our worldview takes as fundamental a self and its world, right? Including the physical world. And it's a self which has a physical existence. It's a self that has a brain and a nervous system and all the other parts that go to making our world. And that brain, to stay with that, is capable of being damaged. Physical, you know, can be physically damaged. And if it is, there will be consequences that involve the way we can experience things. All of that is absolutely true. But if you push back the idea of cause, you know, you can give all sorts of causal explanations, and they work. I mean, you know, better or worse. You can give all sorts of causal explanations. But if you push to the point of saying, what's the source? What ultimately justifies or explains what that means, how that works? Not just within the worldview, from that particular focal setting, but you know, what is the ultimate source of why things arise in that way? Well, you can't point to anything within the experience, because when you point within the experience, you have to end up in a kind of what in philosophy is called an infinite regress. This explains that, but what explains this? And when you've explained this, then what explains the thing that explains this? It's the whole source from view is based on the idea that there's something ultimately real. And the TSK vision is a different vision of reality in which you can say, yeah, things are real, but not ultimately real. because reality just depends on the focal setting, depends on the worldview. So we have several comments here, which is great, and I can see this is going to take us pretty much to the end. I want to say one thing, so I'll go through these and say one more thing. So Michael says, it's as if the possibility of change makes change less imperative. If our experience of reality is open, the face of a mystery, then there's immediately a new breeze entering our world. Yes, I think that's nicely put. Within a particular focal setting or a particular worldview, there's something that Rinpoche calls, a change and improvement orientation or something like that. In other words, we find ourselves in a situation and we want to make that situation better. But that's all within the worldview. There's no need to change if within that context, if you realize that it's just a context that's being established, being created through a particular take on reality, a particular focal setting on reality. And so as Michael says, you don't have to be so concerned with improving things. When you take that improvement orientation, you're just committing yourself to the reality in a way that TSK is really trying to undermine. Klaus asks, Klaus, you wrote your comment privately. I'm sure you didn't mean to. So maybe check to make sure you got that set right. But Klaus says, how about karma when there's no source? Okay. So in Buddhism, this comes up a lot. It gets discussed in Buddhist philosophy, and the treatment in Buddhist philosophy is in some ways similar to what's being said in TSK here. You say, well, if there's no ultimate source, if it all shows up within a particular view of reality, then why is Buddhism so concerned about karma, the consequences of actions? And the traditional Buddhist answer, but I'll try to put it a little bit more in TSK terms here, is that if you could really penetrate the commitment to a particular reality, then karma wouldn't matter. But as long as you are committed to that reality, and the fact that, conceptually, you may say, oh, no, I understand that reality isn't real. I'm way past that, The fact that conceptually or intellectually you say that doesn't mean that you're not committed to it. We still act very much in that vein, that way of engaging the world. So as long as you engage the world in that way, then you'd better play along, You'd better accept within the worldview, the way that it works, and there's a kind of a causality that works there. One of the really remarkable things about the TSK vision is that it says it's giving you a way to call that into question without having to struggle a lot. It's like setting it up in a certain way, taking a certain understanding or a certain perspective in a way that lets you really live it, not just accept it, philosophically or theoretically or conceptually, but really live it. So there is a the whole approach in TSK has to do with finding ways, whether it's through the writing or through the exercises, to call into question our commitment to the ordinary, to the view that we accept. And partly, that's why the aspect of being playful is so important. Sudhi says, perhaps cause or source definition could be the circumstances that bring to view what is invoked. Bring to view what is invoked. I think I see what you're trying to do. Correct me if I'm wrong. You're saying, well, we don't have to accept causality as being kind of strict you know, as being solid, we can just point towards a set of circumstances that lead to a certain way of seeing, or that bring something new into view. And if that's right, if that's kind of what you're pointing towards, yeah, that might be a way of giving us more fluidity. I think what I'm going to do, since we really are out of time, I'm not going to go to something that I wanted to say, but I'll put it in the orientation or, you know, in the remarks that I write. But I will point out something that I thought was very nice that I just happened to come across this week from Visions of Knowledge, another one of the TSK books. My copy is falling apart, so let me save it. Okay. So on page 8 of Visions of Knowledge, he says, it is very much related to what we're talking about, the patterns we embody in our action and our being gain power over us only because we know them to be true. In other words, we know that they're real. Right? But what is the source of that knowing? It seems we accept the way things are because we imagine that they cannot be otherwise. I understand this to be a kind of the opposite way of saying what Rinpoche is saying here when he says reality is not what we think it is. Right? So here he says, why do we accept that reality is exactly the way we think it is? Because we imagine that that's the only way it could be. And what's so nice about that way of expressing it is that it points to the power of the imagination. You know, usually we use the word imagination, we understand the word imagination to mean something that's not real, something that's not the case, that's not so. But the way Rinpoche uses imagination really throughout the TSK books is different from that. Imagination is what opens up possibilities. And yes, it's true that a lot of the things that we imagine aren't true. They're just imagination, as we say. That's how we usually put it. But what this quote from Vision of Knowledge, which you might go look at it, I realize it's hard to take it in all at once. But what this quote is saying is that imagination is already operating. And typically the way it works is that we imagine that there's only one possible reality, and that's the reality that we're in. So we're always already imagining. It's just that the particular imagination we rely on is to imagine that there's a particular reality. Now, again, this doesn't mean, as Hayward says, you know, if someone is brain damaged, they are brain damaged. It's within that setting. Or if I imagine I can fly, that doesn't mean I can fly. It's within that particular setting. But if I imagine that that proves that reality is only that particular way, that's a lack of imagination. So I'll just have to leave it at that for now. I'll add a little bit to this in the materials that I prepare for next week and post online. And maybe give you another walkabout practice. But, you know, if you think about what we've talked about today in light of exercise 11, which is the practice for the week, exercise 11 asks us to look for a source. The reading says there isn't any source. So be prepared to play with those two possibilities, okay? Okay, we'll stop there for today. Thanks.